WNYC Studios is supported by the Brennan Center for Justice, presenting The Failed Experiment of Mass Incarceration. This virtual event on Wednesday, April 17th at 3 p.m. will feature criminal justice advocates and contributors to the new book, Excessive Punishment: How the Justice System Creates Mass Incarceration. They will discuss why the American approach to criminal justice is so punitive and how reforms would prioritize human dignity and restoration over retribution. Find more information and register for this event at brennancenter.org/events.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Steve Lonergan is here now, the Republican candidate for U.S. Senate in New Jersey in the special election next week to succeed the late Frank Lautenberg. He's running against Democrat Cory Booker. Mr. Lonergan, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And given what's happening in Congress right now, let me start with this. If you were in the Senate already, would you have voted for the so-called clean budget resolution that the Senate passed, or would you insist that it be tied to a delay in Obamacare, as is happening in the House?
I would insist that it be tied in a delay to Obamacare, because Obamacare is a train wreck. In the state of New Jersey, some 800,000 people have received letters that they have to find new insurance, that they're being thrown off their retirement plans. We have seniors in turmoil with doctors telling them they're going to stop taking Medicare. There's $750 billion in cuts to Medicare. Major corporations have gotten special exemptions from the president, and I want the same exemptions for individual Americans. Look, the system is just not ready to be rolled out. A one-year delay in implementation of a program that has such a major impact on individuals and on the economy is a reasonable request. And the president and Harry Reid's inability, you know, the fact that they won't even negotiate, I think is pretty disturbing. And I would be holding the line on this. I think it's extremely important to many, many people, to our economy. And, you know, if you're a corporate executive or a CEO of a big corporation, you force a product out that's not ready for market, that's not tried and true, and it crashes and burns, you lose your job or you go out of business. The same thing should apply to this.
Well, the merits of Obamacare aside, Democrats and many Republicans say the wing of the party that's insisting on this is just plain wrong for holding the government hostage to get their way on something that they simply don't have the votes for as a separate measure, delaying Obamacare and shutting down the government, you know, tying it to the budget resolution like that. So you support the tactic. You're willing, it sounds like you're enthusiastic about being associated with that wing of the party.
I'm tired of watching government getting bigger and bigger and more explosive and more intrusive and more dominating over our lives. This explosion of debt, explosion of spending. Sometimes, Brian, just sometimes you have to stand and fight. And the so-called wing of the party apparently is the majority, because they can't get the votes not to override it or to move a clean budget. They don't have enough votes. That's a pretty big wing. In fact, it's the majority of the House of Representatives, and I think it's the majority of Americans. And you see that in the president's polling numbers. You see that in the disapproval of Obamacare. And I'm getting every single day dozens and dozens a day of people contacting my campaigns, freaking out because they're getting these letters that they have to go into some health care exchange and find new insurance, or that insurance is going to go through the roof. There's a report from the Manhattan Institute that New Jersey will be the most expensive health insurance premiums. A 40-year-old male can expect his premium to go up 47% in 1 year. And this is devastating. And the president gave exemptions to major corporations. Let's give the same consideration to the American people.
You keep calling Mr. Booker a rubber stamp for President Obama. He keeps calling you a Tea Party extremist. I imagine that Mr. Booker will gladly accept being aligned with President Obama as he runs in New Jersey. Do you take the Tea Party label for yourself?
No. I mean, the Tea Party label is pretty much thrown around wherever you want. It's an eclectic group of Americans that sort of came together around the country in a series of demonstrations of opinion all kinds of Americans. It's rather a diverse group. So, in that regards, and I'm willing to speak out and stand up for liberty, yes, I would say I'm a Tea Party person. But there is no real Tea Party, Brian. There's no organization. It's just
right.
it's sort of like a loosely knit confederacy.
True. Although the organization that you headed, the New Jersey branch of Americans for Prosperity, Koch Brothers funded, is often referred to as a Tea Party group.
Well, the liberal left has found in their polling that there's apparently a weakness or some public opinion about the word Tea Party. So they'd apply that to everybody. If you're with Americans for Prosperity, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, Steve Lonning, it's all Tea Party, Tea Party, Tea Party.
And so
that's shallow rhetoric. On the other hand, my opponent thinks Obamacare is a great bill. He wants it implemented no matter what. He's a major advocate for more big government, more spending, more debt, more intrusion into our privacy by the NSA. So there's a clear difference in this race, and I'm proud of that. And I'll shrug off these labels. I'm a conservative libertarian, principled former mayor of a Democrat town. I have a vast background in running a small town, building a small business, raising a family. If that makes me a Tea Party person, well, so be it.
And I'm curious to get at how limited the government would be if you had your way, if you're a small government guy. Let me play a clip of Mr. Booker from your Channel 7 debate last week. And get your reaction to it. He starts here by referring to your position on Pell Grants.
Not only should the federal government have no role in that, when Sandy Aid was coming to our state for incredible, incredible crisis that was created by a hurricane, a superstorm, he said that we shouldn't take federal dollars for that. He said literally that he would have voted against that money. So please understand, in this extreme view of the Tea Party, which my opponent supports, he believes that programs to help our kids with college, infrastructure for our roads and bridges, help in a storm, in a crisis, that we shouldn't take those resources.
Now, you didn't deny any of that during the debate. Was it because the format didn't give you the chance or because those are actually your positions?
There's a fundamental difference between me and Mr. Booker. He made it very, very clear. Cory Booker thinks the government is the answer to every single problem, from college education to raising our kids to dealing with hurricane damage. And I don't believe that's the case. I believe very much in the private sector and in civil society. So the format did not give me the chance to address these individual tyrants of allegations. However, I could do that. I would absolutely have voted against the Sandy bill. It was really done in haste. It's a massive amount of money. And I said early on it's going to be massive amounts of waste. And I said that this money will not get to the people who truly need it. And that's exactly what's happening. There were thousands of people whose homes have been destroyed who haven't seen a penny of Sandy money. And that money is being sloshed around to all these politically connected entities, but it's not getting to the true victims. And I said that would happen. The second thing I said, if we're going to come up with $67 billion, we have to take it from somewhere else. We have to cut somewhere else in the budget. That's what a family has to do in this type of a situation. But you know what they did? They printed it out of thin air. They just created more debt, more new money out of thin air. And it's exactly what I said would happen. I would have required that to be significant controls in place of how that money would be used. You know, haste makes waste, and those adages always apply, and that's exactly what they did. They rushed into it because the politicians saw a way to grab a lot of money real fast.
But which is it? Is it make sure that it's distributed effectively, or, as I think you said at the beginning of your answer, you would have voted against allocating that money for Sandy relief in New Jersey at all?
Yes. The way it was structured, I would have voted against it. I would have insisted on other cuts in the budget to offset this new spending, number one, and I would have required careful controls in how that money was utilized and a better explanation of how they come up with these numbers.
And on the thing that question was originally about, Pell Grants, would you abolish federal Pell Grants?
I think it's time to start looking at those Pell Grants. You know, Brian, I come from a moderate to low-income family. My dad died when I was a teenager. My mom was a single mom. When I got out of high school, I went to work for a year full-time to save money to go to college. Then I worked my way through college, and I had a full-time job pretty much the whole time I was in college loading trucks. And I didn't get advantage of any of these Pell Grants. I don't know how this works. For some reason, because my mom had a job as a secretary, I didn't qualify. So, yeah, maybe it's just time we started relooking at all these programs and exactly how effective they are. I'm not going to say whether or not I would vote against Pell Grants. I hadn't given it that much thought. But I think we have to reconsider all of these programs before we bankrupt our country.
And you said you would abolish the Department of Education, or at least I keep hearing and reading that about you.
Oh, especially for the state of New Jersey.
What do you mean?
New Jersey ranks as like one of the lowest states on the ladder for getting any money back from the federal government. So every dollar we send to the federal government, we get back 30 or 40 cents. So there's no benefit to this state in having a federal Department of Education that's simply redistributing New Jersey's wealth. Education is local. My wife is a teacher, and my daughter is a teacher. I have two teachers in my household. So I know a little bit from them about what it takes to teach a kid, and every child is different. And every kid's education should be tailored differently. We don't need a federal Department of Education, a bunch of bureaucrats dictating how children are going to be taught from their ivory towers in Washington and taking our money, taking a dollar and giving us back 40 cents. That doesn't benefit the state at all.
This was considered a position that was too extreme for the Republican Party when it was floated for a while, I guess during the Reagan era. And the Republicans have backed off on it because the Department of Education funds services for poor children, Title I, it funds special ed. It does so many things that people feel in their neighborhood schools in New Jersey that this is seen as an abstract libertarian position that would actually hurt the state of New Jersey.
Well, I was the mayor of a town here for 12 years, and we fund our own school board, and we get little or nothing at all from the federal government, little or nothing. For the massive amounts of money we send to the federal government. So that's a misconception. The federal government funds virtually nothing for the suburban towns of New Jersey, maybe a little bit. The vast majority of our school funding is from the pockets of New Jersey taxpayers, but we send lots and lots of money to the federal government, and they send it somewhere else. So anybody, you know, if they give you back a grant for a couple of million, but you send them $20 million, that's not benefiting my state.
But Bogota, where you were mayor, is an affluent town, right?
So tell the working people of Bogota who go to work every day in their buses to New York as plumbers, as carpenters, as electricians, as teachers, who work to maintain their properties, that they're affluent. This is a middle-class community, and our incomes are dropping during this so-called recovery of Barack Obama. You know, Brian, this is the first time in the history of keeping economic statistics that you've had a recovery where family incomes are dropping. And that's what's happening in my town. So the answer is no, we're not an affluent community. This is a typical New Jersey working community, represents much of the state. And I won here three times talking about the exact same things I'm talking to you about. That's why I'm going to win this election next Wednesday.
Let me ask you if you're a libertarian on foreign policy, too, like kind of a Ron Paul libertarian. He would take a lot of the same positions that you do on domestic economics. How about on foreign policy? Like, he would say that the U.S. was the aggressor in our relationship with Iran. He would say we should discontinue our levels of aid to Israel and to Egypt. Are you in those same places?
I don't really compare myself to others. I sort of establish my own. I do my own research and try to establish what I believe is the best thing to do. I would support a strong Israel. I'm a major supporter. Our best ally and our best path to stability in the Middle East is to make sure Israel is solid. That means the best military defense systems possible. This is not an aggressor nation. This is a nation that needs the best systems, air and ground defense out there. I would not allow Iran to have nuclear weapons. Those nuclear weapons will be pointed at Israel. That's a real threat. So I think that's something we have to be very cautious about.
So aid to Israel at its current levels?
As long as that current level is enough to fund the best military defense system possible, defend the air space around that country from any assault or missiles from others. So that means even more military aid. I don't know if those levels are adequate. I don't have that much depth of understanding of the exact military technology, but I imagine it is. So the answer is yes.
Is the U.S. the aggressor in the relationship with Iran?
No, absolutely not. The U.S. has never been an aggressor. We're not an imperial nation. We are there to defend liberty and to defend our allies, but we should also not be the police force for the rest of the world. We've become too much of an interventionist, and, you know, if these statists have their way, we'll be in a perpetual state of war. And that's why I clearly opposed the bombing of Syria from day one, with good philosophical reason. And my opponent changed his position a good half a dozen times over the course of 2 weeks. So what you'll find in Steve Lonergan, Brian, if nothing else that you like, is consistency. You know, across the board, I believe I've been consistent on virtually all of the major issues, all of the major issues over my many years in politics. And there's one thing, to conservatives out there who support me, that's wonderful. To liberals out there, on which we probably agree on 60% of the issues, on those 60%, you can trust 100% that I'm going to be fighting for you in Washington.
Some of the comments that you made in this campaign have startled people and perhaps raised temperament issues, like in response to a question about the environment, you said people can't swim in the Passaic River because of all the bodies from Newark floating there.
Actually, it was the portion of the river at Newark, and that happens to be the case.
So regardless of your point about the crime rate, people are still grieving from the recent spate of murders. Does that language raise a temperament issue?
Well, it illustrates something, that there's a record, you know, robbery in Newark just hit its 14-year high. They're on their path to 100 murders in Newark this year. We had one a day for 10 days in a row, one while my opponent was on the Jimmy Fallon show, 14-year-old boy. And the fact is, in the last month, 6 months, there have been two shooting victims thrown into that river. So that happens to be factually correct. Many more than that into that river over the last 7 years. So people should view this openly and say, yeah, that's true. I mean, we would never tolerate this in suburban communities. And I don't know why the media and even politicians accept this failure in Newark. It's almost as if I get this mentality, well, what do you expect? It's Newark. I don't expect it. I do not. I think this mayor has failed Newark miserably. And I think he should be held accountable for it.
You're running for U.S. Senate, not mayor of Newark, but did you have other police policies? And I know he'll dispute some of the numbers, and we'll play this clip of you when he's on the show next week before the election. But do you have other ways that you would have fought crime in Newark?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, he slashed the police department, laying off at least 160 police directly, plus others through attrition. So there's a real shortage of police on the streets of Newark because money was diverted to these various Newark agencies, which are patronage mills for politically connected hacks. As the mayor of Bogota, crime dropped in my town 30%. I actually put more police on the streets. You can't fight crime without police. Now, you mentioned not running for Newark, but how effective you are in office in achieving results is really an indication of how effective you will be in the United States Senate.
And one other temperament question. In answering a question about Booker's unknown sexual orientation, you told Newsmax he has a reported fetish of getting manicures and pedicures and that, quote, as a guy, I personally like being a guy. I like a good scotch and a cigar. Unquote. So does New Jersey in 2013 want to celebrate that limited notion of masculinity?
I don't know if I have a limited notion of masculinity. I do know that I like a good scotch and a good cigar. My opponent did go out of his way to publicize his midnight manicures and pedicures. It was in articles all over the place. I mean, it was for some odd reason. So if it's okay for him to say this is what he likes to do, I don't see why I can't say what I enjoy. Sort of a double standard, isn't it?
60 seconds for anything you want to say to the voters.
The election is on Wednesday, October 16th. I believe in limited government that will unleash the unlimited potential of every American to reach the best, highest level of achievement. And that's what my campaign is about. And in my travels around New Jersey the last 4 months, the one thing I've learned is people are hungry for straight talk and integrity, which you don't see a lot of in politicians, and that people want. And rather than trying to get everybody to agree on things, on everything, what people want is honesty and principle, and they're tired of politicians whose first commitment is to their own self-aggrandizement and promotion at our expense. And that's really what this election is coming down to. So to my fellow Americans out there, I will be working hard for you in Washington on every issue, striving to make just America a better place.
Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate in New Jersey in the special election next week, Steve Lonergan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the arts in New York after Bloomberg with the outgoing Cultural Affairs Commissioner, Kate Levin. Stay with us.